is take this stool and put it down here on the floor and have us pull out chairs all together and just kind of gather up so we can have a little chat. Because it's insane what we are in the middle of. But if I get off the stage to do that with you guys in this room, then all of you who are on the other side of that screen, I'll be down on the stage and it will get awkward for you. So what I really want to do is climb through the screen and come sit in your living room or sit wherever you are watching from and come and sit with you as well. But that would take the actions of an incredible superhero, which I am not. So I can't do that. So my best bet is to stay right here on this stool and stay right here on the stage. But we can still have a chat. We can still have a chat. Because times are insane. Does anybody else feel like that? I heard some of you through the screen say, These guys were a little quieter that are here, but I heard a couple of those. Isn't it odd a little bit that things feel so insane? I don't know about you guys, but I have chatted with a number of my friends, some of you in this room, who are walking through the massive changes that are occurring in this world of Disney and the company because of the world of COVID and how that's unfolding. And though we all understand on some level that there are just bigger things going on than we can imagine, and we all have some sense of grace to the world in which we live, as I'm talking to more and more people that are engaged in these spaces in Disney, I'm realizing that there is a myriad of feelings going on in the current space that are really big. They're really big. Like, it would be one thing for us to say, some of you have lost your job. Like, you were working at Chick-fil-A or McDonald's and you lost your job. And so you would think that the feeling that you would have in this environment is more the feeling of losing a job. So it's some of those concerns and anxieties that come with loss of income and wondering what you do next. But that is not what I think is going on at all. At least that's not the feelings I'm engaging with as I'm talking with many of you. I said to somebody, I feel much more like I'm walking into a space where I'm coming into a hospital room and gathering up with some folks that are watching a loved one in their last breaths, and I'm sitting with them to grieve the loss of this loved one. Like, that's what it feels like. So maybe we would say that it's just over dramatic, you know, that we're way too tied to this crazy job at Disney, and so we're all overreacting. It's nothing like the death of a loved one, but I would wholeheartedly disagree. I think I know exactly why it feels this way to many of you, because Disney's a little different when you work with this company than other jobs, because it ties to a wonder and a magic and a pixie dust that's different, and it ties to hopes, it ties to dreams, it ties to joys, it ties to social networks and friends. And when I say hopes and dreams, I mean that this is not just a job for most of you at Disney. It ties to what your future looks like. I was talking to somebody this morning who just got the email yesterday that her journey at Disney has come to its end, right? In some form. And she was initially in California doing some of the backstage makeup stuff. And then she got into costume design. And she moved here to still be backstage, but do a lot of costume design. And her dream for the future is to get into that world. So this was her journey into that world, right? And then in an instant, one email later, and all of that is gone. So will it come back? Will it not? I don't know. And so I could see when I was talking with her this morning, this kind of confusion in her mind. Like, I feel this deep loss and this deep grief over what I'm losing, but I do feel bad that I feel that way because it's just a job, isn't it? And so the question becomes, do you have permission to feel these big feelings? Or are you just being a silly person who lost a silly job? And so I got to sit with her and say, no. These big feelings you're having, God designed us this way, that when we are losing giant parts of our life, whether it's a loved one or a pet that we loved or a job that means more to us than an income, that it's part of our hopes and dreams, that when that loss occurs, it feels really big, and God designed us that way to feel really bigly in it. Is that a word? I don't know. Doesn't matter. Feels like a word to me. And it's interesting too, because for me, as I have been exploring a little more of why this feels so big to all of us, because I will tell you, I'm not a cast member at Disney, but I feel like I should be. One, because I've always wanted to be Goofy. I'm just saying, always, as far back as I can remember. Or Roger Rabbit, one of those two, because I'm 6'7", and so those just seem to be the appropriate spaces for me to want to be in. And they're both crazy, and I love crazy. But also, having traveled with not only many of you in this room, but many who have come before you. This campus has turned over like 497 times in the last 9 years, right? I mean, so thousands of cast members that we've traveled with. Like, I feel like I'm one of you. I do. So when all this is happening, I feel this deep grief. In this room, it's strange, isn't it? Some of us have gotten emails or phone calls that our time at Disney is over or will be over December 4th or December 14th or whatever date they gave you. Some of us in this room haven't gotten that call yet or that email yet, but we're wondering if we're going to get that call. So we're in a different weird space of anxiety, like, will I make it through? Won't I make it through? What does all this mean? Then there's some of us that didn't get that call because we're full-time and we know we're not going to get that call and we're pretty safe, but we're feeling super bad about all our friends who did get that call. And how do we celebrate what didn't happen to us when it happened to all of our friends? And so you can't celebrate and you can't grieve and you don't want to grieve and you don't want to celebrate, and it's just super weird. And then some of us here don't work for the company, and so we're trying to figure out how on earth we relate to those of you that do work for the company that feel guilty that you didn't lose your job, and those of you that do work for the company that might lose your job, and those of you that do work for the company that just lost your job. And that the grief in all of this is massive, because it's not the loss of a job, it's the loss of a dream. It's the loss of hope. It's the loss of joy. And it's the loss of future. This is big stuff. This is big stuff for all of you. And you know, one of my good friends, who you guys will know, and I asked her permission to share this. I mean, it was on social media, so it's public already, but I'm sharing it in a slightly different public space. So I touched base with her. Some of you guys know Deborah, and she's dear to us because she's on our team here at Mosaic, but then also Disney is a space for her. And she wrote something yesterday that when I read, I thought to myself, the reason grief feels so big in this moment for those of you that are cast members that have gotten emails and phone calls that you have lost your jobs, I think she captures better than anyone I've heard. So I'm going to read briefly what she wrote, and I know this will resonate with some of you, though her little moment is different than your moment. She writes, "There's a grief too terrible to name. It's unimaginable to me that I'll never wipe the fingerprints off BB-8's little tummy again, or help Chewbacca pop out of a hiding space and scare people, or laugh behind my hand at Kylo's dramatics. These were my friends and my hobby, my place of complete confidence and mastery, my social life and my safest haven for years. It's unimaginable to me how I can live my adult life without it. Don't ask me if I'm okay. I'm not. Don't say you're praying for me. I've got plenty of my own words for God right now. Don't quote Walt. If you know me, you'll know that I've always been a bit uncomfortable with his deification in this town. Just if you're a cast member, please tell me that you'll miss me, because I'm going to miss this more than I have the courage to type right now." Is that how you feel? Because that's how Deborah feels. And that's how I feel for her. I've got so many of my friends that this space of being part of Disney, part of the magic, part of the dreams that will unfold, is a big deal. and it has suddenly been taken. And you know what else is super weird? I know some of you guys can relate to this. I've had this conversation on multiple occasions with several of my friends now, especially part-timers who are out of town briefly, but they kind of come and go. You know that awesome world of Disney where you kind of hold on to Disney even though you kind of go away for a bit. And so they've gotten emails and phone calls just saying, your last day is such and such. I was talking to one of my friends, actually Jennifer White, who's some of you guys remember. Some of you don't because this place turns around every 2.5 months. And so, but Jennifer, who is Brady's wife, she wasn't, she still is. We were talking this afternoon. And, you know, she got the email yesterday. And so her last day, I think, is December 14th. But what does it mean that that's her last day? It's not like it's actually her last day. Like she comes here and then she works on that day and then it's her last day. It's just like a notice, like your last day is December 14th. You're not going to come in. It's just the last day that we call you a cast member. So doesn't that feel super weird? Like if I'm going to have a last day, I feel like I should work that last day. I feel like I should have closure. I feel like I should be able to go and say goodbye to my friends and do my last few things like I do on a last day. Except they just told me that date, this arbitrary date is it. And then you're done and that's over. And so all of this stuff is insane and it's crazy. So I was talking to some friends of mine at the YMCA. So at the YMCA, I get the privilege of being on the board at the YMCA for the Central Florida YMCA space. And I have been part of that for a number of years. And so I'm privy to the inside realities of all of their financial movements and things like that, which is a great privilege to know. And part of the reason why I'm part of the YMCA in Central Florida is because they desire a gospel centrality in Central Florida. Not all of the YMCA is like that, but the YMCA Central Florida is. And so I get to play a role in making that happen. And you can imagine the world they're in, like Disney. Because Disney is entertainment and we're in a COVID insanity, YMCA is in the sort of gym world and that world. I mean, it just obliterated them. I mean, it obliterated them. I can't begin to express to you the financial impact that it had on the YMCA these last few months. It's mind-boggling what they have to adjust, right? So, I mean, they too had to adjust from thousands of people on their team to hundreds of people on their team. I mean, just think about the reality of that, right? So we were in a meeting, and the CEO of the YMCA and the COO and the CFO and the executive team, and we're all in a room together just kind of trying to grapple with and wrap our minds around this. And I was supposed to kind of share something with them because, you know, I'm the consummate pastor, so I bring the devotional when they ask. I'm like, okay, come share a devotional in that space. So what do you do with that, right? You're like, okay, complete decimation. Everything we've dreamt about and worked for the last decade is gone. We don't know what the next 10 years looks like. Come share with us about Jesus. And you're like, Jesus is enough? I don't know. Does that sound like enough? Doesn't sound like enough to me. So I'm like, what do I do? So I looked back over the YMCA's history. This is how we all should be talking, by the way, right now. I'm just saying. Do any of you feel this way? You know, it's very good for you to throw temper tantrums as an adult. I just want to throw that out there as a quick side note. Best place to do it, though, is in your closet. If you go in your closet, if it's not big enough to lay in, then just put your head inside your closet and have your body come out. But if you have a closet that's big enough, get inside of it, get into the fetal position, and then kick the walls like really hard and shout just like that. Guarantee you tonight, go do it. It feels so good. Just don't do it on the road in traffic. Do it in your closet at home. Then it's appropriately gospel. On the road in traffic, it is not gospel. Okay, so where am I? YMCA. We're chatting. I'm not preaching. We're chatting. So YMCA. So I went back to look at the history of the YMCA. Just wondering what they've gone through. Do you know when the YMCA started? You don't, so I'm going to just tell you. It was 1847 in London, and then in 1851, the YMCA started in the U.S. So somebody saw it in London, they came, 1851. How cool is that? So in 1851, this desire to see a place for young Christians to come around and do their thing, they start the YMCA. And they're less than a decade in. So when you start a brand new company, just in case none of you have ever done that before, it takes about a decade to get your feet under you. I know, because I started a company and we're just about a decade old and I just feel like we got our feet under us. And we started Mosaic and that's 18 years old. And I think a decade ago, I just feel like we got our feet under us. So it takes about a decade. Just when you're like, I think we're stable. Do you know what happened in 1861? Historical test. The Civil War. We didn't hate each other on social media. We shot actual bullets at each other. We actually went onto battlefields, the North and the South, and we tried to kill each other. And thousands of people died. Real deaths in a real war, the Civil War. The YMCA was just about 10 years old. Can you imagine that crisis? Can you imagine those board meetings? There's a civil war going on. How do we navigate this? Then the civil war faded. And then there was the whole journey of what came post-civil war and all of the realities that that did in the recovery of that. They finally recovered from that. Do you know what happened in 1914? The First World War. That's right. Can you imagine being on the board for the Y during that time? And the First World War ended in 1918. And they're like, whew, we made it through that. Except that about 10 years later, the Great Depression arrived. You think that our economic landscape is insane now? Go do a documentary on the Great Depression. So what do you do with that? Then they got through that. Then after the Great Depression, just when that started fading, 1929 to 1935, they were just getting their feet under them, 1939. Second World War. And I said to the YMCA team that I was with, none of those things diminish the magnitude of our current scenario. We're not like saying, they had it worse. Get a life, man. This is nothing. That's what we're saying at all. This is giant. But here's what I am saying. The people that lived in the in-between spaces between these giant crises, do you know who they were? They were very important, don't get me wrong. But when we're not in these giant crises, you kind of go about life, there's prosperity, you're doing your thing, it's wonderful. I want those times, those are awesome. But the people that must have walked through those spaces carrying the gospel, what must that have been like? And we're in one of those spaces now. The people of God carrying the gospel into the insanity of this world. When 30 or 40 or 50 or 100 years go by and people talk about the 2020s, they're going to be like, can you imagine what it must have been like to live as a Christian then? And something in me stirs a little bit. Not like makes me happy, like, oh, this is it. But I'm like, oh, I wonder what that means. See, I've been thinking a lot about how we navigate these waters. You know all those feelings I told you about that we're having? They're real. And let me just start here, by the way. If you tried not to grieve through this, you can be in big trouble. If you feel guilty for grieving, that's not a healthy response. The loss that you all are experiencing is real and it's massive and it's worthy of grief. And you should grieve it and cry your eyes out and throw temper tantrums in your closet and wonder whether you're ever going to survive this. And like Deborah say, I can't imagine my adult life without this. Do all of that because it is worthy of it, because it is a big loss. But our story doesn't end with a grief that debilitates us and sinks us and ends our story. Our story is a story of grief with great hope. And how does that happen? So that YMCA story I told you about, I realized that that's just the YMCA's history from 1851. Do you know what happened around AD 40? Maybe 38, maybe 40, maybe 42, somewhere in there. So that's about 2,000 years ago. 2,000 years ago. The church in the early New Testament context, as we know, it was brand new. It had just started. It had like two decades under its feet. The gospel was moving and it was brand new. And there was a great persecution that broke out in Jerusalem that scattered all of the Jewish people that had become Christians, followers of Jesus, into the known world. And so all these guys were out and these ladies were out preaching the gospel and trying to live their lives out there. And the apostles were doing incredible things and they were out preaching. And Cornelius, who was a Gentile, hadn't even heard the gospel yet, so he didn't even know the gospel was for the Gentiles yet. And there was this incident that took place where James, the disciple of Jesus, was called into this situation with Herod, and Herod tricked them in this party, and he chopped James's head off. Actually chopped his head off. He killed him. So this is one of the apostles, right? So the church was already feeling nervous. They're like, how do we navigate this craziness? Lots of persecution, lots of insanity. And then one of their apostle leaders was killed. So what that told them immediately was, if the apostles are not immune to this persecution, we are dead in the water, right? Then Herod realized how excited the religious leaders were and Rome was that he killed one of the apostles. And so he thought, this is awesome. So he went and found Peter and he arrested him and put him in prison because he wanted to kill him as well. Except that an angel came and released Peter from prison. So Peter went to the church and said to the church, okay, things have heated up a ton, so I'm going to go quiet for a little while. Just put your heads down and we'll don't worry, God is in this. But can you imagine how discombobulating they must have felt? Early New Testament church, no New Testament writings, no history, no clarities of Revelation, no clarities of Ephesians, no clarities of the book of Romans, no Philippians, no nothing. Just the Old Testament, a brand new gospel, and persecution wiping it off the map. And James, the half-brother of Jesus, who was leading the church in Jerusalem, sits down at a desk to pen a letter to the whole church, global church, to the whole global church. He starts it, to the 12 tribes scattered. That's how he starts the letter, to the 12 tribes scattered. And it's almost like he wrote, I know things are insane. I know you're wondering if God is even present. I know you're thinking to yourself, where is God? What is he doing? Does he hear us? I've shouted prayers to him and there's nothing. Our apostles are being killed. Persecution is winning and the gospel ain't gonna make it. And then he intros the letter this way. Listen to this. It was upside down. It's okay. It's the way the world is right now. So I just turned it right way up. If only it was that easy. Listen to this. James, a servant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes in the dispersion or scattered, greetings. Count it all joy, my brothers and sisters, when you meet trials of various kinds. For you know that the refining of your faith, or the testing of your faith, produces steadfastness. And steadfastness, let it have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So that's where James starts. I know it's insane right now. I know it is, and it's worthy of grief. Grieve James's death. Grieve the realities of persecution. Don't pretend it's not real. But do not lose hope. Because God's work will not be undone by anything that any power or principality on this planet or in all of the universe or in all the spiritual realms will throw at us. Because he has said, I will finish the good work I began in you, and I will finish all of the good work and make all things new. So he says, does it feel hard? Does it feel overwhelming? Do you feel like you've lost a bit of yourself? Welcome to the human story on planet death, in a body of death with an enemy against us, in a world of persecution that is totally unpredictable, with tsunamis and storms and tornadoes and pandemics and economic crashes and world wars and everything else that makes this planet every bit as horrible as I just made it sound. But know this, that what you had before you knew me was simply whatever you could extract from this planet of death and hold on to. And when you lost it, you lost all hope and had no hope. But now that you know me, I have shown you something brand new. That whatever circumstances you may encounter, and whatever things you celebrate or grieve, and is it worthy of celebrating things when they are awesome? Anybody out there? No, it's not Jesus, it's enough. No. Every good and perfect gift is from the Father above. That's in James as well. He's like, celebrate it, it's awesome. And when you lose things that were dear to you, is it worthy of grief? Absolutely. But what has he told us that we now know? That in the midst of celebration, we don't lose our heads and make the thing we're celebrating our idols. And in the midst of grief, we don't lose our heads and lose hope while we are grieving. What has he shown us? What has he told us? Well, he said this. You and I were dead, but he has made us alive. Then you and I had no eternal future, and then he gave it back to us. And then, here it is. You and I had only one purpose on this planet, to try and navigate all of the circumstances in such a way that we could extract from them what we need and survive the ride. Get our dreams realized, do our thing. But that's all changed now, because now I have made you my ambassadors, which means that in any circumstance, in any relational dynamic, in any resource reality, your job description doesn't change. See, it used to change. If you were with Disney, you had one job description, and when you lost that job, you had to try to figure out what on earth you're gonna do with your life now, because your entire life was in that. That's how it does feel. But what Jesus reminds us of is, remember, that was never your job description to start with. Pastoring Mosaic Church is not my primary job description. It's just the platform that I currently utilize to fulfill my job description. Disney was not your job description. It was just the platform you currently use to fulfill your job description. Wealth is not your job description. It's just a platform you can use to fulfill your job description. Poverty is not your job description. It is just a platform that you can use to fulfill your job description. Marriage is not your job description. It is just a platform that you can use to fulfill your job description. And singleness is not your job description. It is just a platform that you can use to fulfill your job description. So what on earth is your job description? It is the created purpose to which we were made that we lost in the fall of mankind and gained back in the redemptive work of Jesus. To know God in every bit of every way that we can, and to make him known in every bit of every way that we can. You cannot know God fully until you have suffered. And you cannot know God fully until you've had some prosperity. You cannot know God fully until you have celebrated gain, and you cannot know God fully until you have experienced loss. You cannot know God fully until you have seen your dreams realized, and you cannot know God fully until you have seen your dreams taken from you. You cannot know God fully until you have been in poverty, and you cannot know God fully until you have been in wealth. Meaning, not that we have to experience all of those things, but every one of them gives us an opportunity to know something of God we could otherwise not have known. I remember watching a movie called The Mission. It's very old. I think it was made in the 1800s. No, I'm just kidding. It is a beautiful movie about these two guys that go on this on the mission field. And it was actually not a Christian movie. But in this movie, the movie starts out with one of the guys climbing a cliff to go and preach the gospel to a tribe in the Amazon jungle. And when he gets to the tribe takes him, ties him to a cross, floats him down the river, and he goes over a waterfall and dies. Never gets to preach the gospel to them. And then the whole movie is about the two missionaries that follow in his footsteps to try to preach the gospel to this tribe. Crazy people, right? I will never forget, as I watched the cross float down the little river to go over the waterfall and for the guy to die, not having fulfilled everything he put work into fulfilling. I remember saying to God, oh, that I could die that way. Like I remember asking God, if you would see fit to make me a martyr someday in my life, I would very much appreciate that. I still ask him that. Don't tell my wife. All my kids. But I'm like, why? Why would I think something so stupid? Do you know why? Because here was my thought. I wonder what he might have experienced and known of God that I cannot know until I'm tied to a cross, going toward a waterfall after seeing my dreams not come true, so that I would die instead of bringing the gospel to a tribe. What could you know of God that you could know no other place? And I'm a bit jealous. He knows something of God I do not know, and I want to know it. So our job description is to know as much as we can of God. So listen to me, folks. Listen to me, all of you. Do not grieve this so deeply that you miss the opportunity to discover what it is you will know of God in this dark place that you would not know of God in any other place. Do not grieve so deeply that you miss things of God that you will gain no other time in your life other than this one moment. And as you dig into this moment, ask God, what can I know of you? What will I know of you? What should I see of you that only this moment affords me in my entire lifetime? I pray that you will never go through a moment like this again in your life. You might, but I pray you don't. But you do have this one right now. An email that told you you no longer work for Disney. Or an anxiety that you don't know if you're going to work for Disney. A loss of your dreams and hopes for the future you had. This is your moment to know God in a way you otherwise couldn't. And then, what can you make known of God in this moment that no other moment before it has afforded you the privilege in the same way this one does? Do you know how many of your friends who don't know Jesus only know how to grieve without hope? They only know how to grieve without hope. Because all of their hope was placed in what they just lost. And they hope to gain some other thing that they can place their hope into, but they don't know what that's going to be yet. So they have currently no hope. You are grieving with them and you ought to grieve with them. But the opportunity that you face to grieve with hope and to walk in and make God known in a unique way without making him a pixie dust God that fixes their little problems, but to make him a real person that they can encounter and that they would see him in you. There is a uniqueness to this moment that you will never have again. And God, I pray for all of you that in your grief, you would not miss the extraordinary sacred nature of this moment. These next few days and weeks and months, where you will have to plant your feet on nothing but Christ alone and stand on nothing but the hope you have in him, because everything you had your feet planted on in this world has been taken from you. And it got taken from you so suddenly, you don't even know what to do about that. I know you're sitting beside the bed with your hopes and dreams laying on that bed, your joys and the magic and social networks and beauty, and someone literally just said to you, they died. And you're like, what? Hold on, what do you mean? They were fine yesterday. I'm so sorry to tell you, but they're dead. But it is in this moment that God waits to show you things, and that God waits to use you in ways that no other sacred moment from this day forward or no sacred moment behind you will ever afford you. And I am grateful because I have walked through dark spaces in my past, and I suspect some dark ones yet to come. That in the darkest of dark spaces and the lightest of light spaces, one thing has remained consistently true. My job description hasn't changed. So in wealth or poverty, in health or sickness, in joblessness or job fullness, I don't know, in dreams come true or dreams lost, I can know God more and I can make God more known. So the gospel truth for you tonight is this. Your job description hasn't changed as much as Disney's trying to convince you otherwise. And your future has not been lost as much as the world is trying to convince you it has. And your dreams are not as gone as you might think. But your dreams will change now, and they will mature now, and they will grow now, and they will find new avenues to a place eventually where they will be so grounded in the trueness of your true job description that nothing in this world will shake you. But that's for a future time. Right now, in grief, hold fast to who you are in Christ and trust him not to give you a better job, but to use you in powerful ways in the midst of not having one and show you powerful things in the midst of not having one. I grieve with you guys. I do. I feel that thing in the back of my throat like I want to cry consistently throughout the day. Really, I mean it. Every phone call I make to another person I love at Disney, I'm like, okay, breathe deeply, Renaud. Don't cry on the phone like a baby. And then I call them and then I cry. But I'm also excited for you. Because you do not even yet know what you will know. And you do not yet know what he will do with you and through you in this beautiful and sacred time. Let's pray. God, I pray for my friends in this room and those sitting in their living rooms watching us now and those who could not be with us tonight and those who do not even yet know of us as a community and those who do not know you. For the magnitude of what this pandemic has affected and then the magnitude of that impact on so many whose hopes and dreams tied to the career that they were building at Disney have just been pulled out from under their feet. As they stand shaken to the core, grieving the loss of hopes and dreams and income and practicality. And for those who are trying to figure out how to celebrate that they haven't lost their job and yet how to grieve with those who have. For all of those in this room who are impacted by the realities of all that is happening at Disney. I pray for your grace, for your comfort, for your mercy. I pray for the freedom to grieve fully. I pray that they wouldn't feel the need to pretend that it's not a big deal, because it is a big deal. I pray for many tears. I pray for many struggles and wonderings on whether you even hear us still. Because it is in those moments of faith crises that you seem to produce in us things that lead to steadfastness, that bring us to a place where we lack nothing. So remind the folks that are with us now, here and online, that this is a sacred moment, a sacred space that they may never have again, where they must wrestle with the realities of their faith like they have never wrestled before. That they might find things, great and unsearchable things that they do not yet know, that you will give them, that they can only know in this place. And that they would demonstrate great and unsearchable things to those around them that they can only demonstrate in this sacred space. Thank you, Jesus, that you take the darkest things this planet has to throw at us and you redeem them into sacred places where we can know you and make you known in ways otherwise impossible. So God, rise up in us. Rise up in them and show them the way so that they might find that you are more than they imagined. More than enough for even these dark days. We love you, Jesus.